It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. And let's begin today by acknowledging that we now officially have a New Yorker running for president. Never mind that the 2016 race was New Yorker against New Yorker, and you know how that turned out. So maybe it's not that novel around here, but nevertheless, it's a big deal, right? And if you haven't heard yet, because it only came out at 11:30 last night on the CBS Late Show with Stephen Colbert, it's Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. Here's her one-minute statement to Colbert and to the world.
I'm going to run for president of the United States because as a young mom, I'm going to fight for other people's kids as hard as I would fight for my own, which is why I believe that healthcare should be a right and not a privilege. It's why I believe we should have better public schools for our kids because it shouldn't matter what block you grow up on. And I believe that anybody who wants to work hard enough should be able to get whatever job training they need to earn their way into the middle class. But you are never going to accomplish any of these things if you don't take on the systems of power that make all of that impossible, which is taking on institutional racism. It's taking on the corruption and greed in Washington, taking on the special interests that write legislation in the dead of night. And I know that I have the compassion, the courage, and the fearless determination to get that done.
Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, how many announcements for president get played out by a house band? But that was, of course, on Colbert last night. She joined Senator Elizabeth Warren, Senator Tulsi Gabbard, former HUD Secretary Julian Castro, and former Maryland Congressman John Delaney with their hats in the Democratic ring. Many more to come. Will there be more New Yorkers? A current or former mayor, maybe? Or perhaps a current governor who gave a very national-sounding State of the State address yesterday?
We know the future. Let New York lead.
He also talked about, the State of the State address included the words Green New Deal and congestion pricing and covered marijuana legalization, taking control of the MTA, establishing more clearly who runs it, and concentrating state education funding on students in the highest need schools.
Those children have more obstacles than the children in the richer schools.
He also talked about early voting, which passed the legislature on Monday, a transgender rights bill and a ban on anti-gay conversion therapy, which passed yesterday, and making Amazon collect New York State sales tax. It's a lot.
It's a lot, no doubt about it. But there's been a lot that has been bottled up for many, many years that we couldn't get done. And in many ways, I feel the state is now liberated with the Senate Democratic Caucus.
So our first guest today, like Kirsten Gillibrand, you might say, is a leading New York State senator, too. Andrea Stewart-Cousins is the brand new Senate Majority Leader in the New York State Senate, with the Democrats having won that majority of seats. Her own Westchester district runs from Yonkers to Tarrytown along the Hudson River and New Rochelle to the White Plains area in the east. Senator Stewart-Cousins, thanks so much for joining us. The Senate is already making history here in week one. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, it's really, really good to be there. Thanks, Brian.
So first, as one senator from New York to another, does Senator Gillibrand automatically get your endorsement, or how will you figure that out?
Well, I don't figure it out right now, but I can certainly tell you that Senator Gillibrand has been a great friend. She, she's kind of inspirational. I mean, she wrote the Get Off the Sidelines, her book, and she's certainly someone who's never believed that she should be on the sidelines. So she is obviously one to watch, but it's early.
And obviously you're not on the sidelines as now one of the big three people in the room, the Assembly Speaker, you as Senate Majority Leader, and the Governor to make a lot of decisions for state policy going forward. We heard some of the Governor's agenda items there on that list. How much do they match up with yours as Senate Majority Leader?
Oh, pretty much. We have, as you know, and certainly you have been diligent in following the journey of the Senate Democrats. So many of the things on his agenda have been on our agenda for quite some time. And as he said, they've been bottled up. Even as he spoke, you clearly talked about our election reform on Monday and passing agenda on Tuesday and banning conversion therapy and so on, which were in his state of the state as though they were still to be done. We are running as fast as we can to eliminate the backlog. And again, much of that backlog was reflected in his certainly social agenda.
You passed at least two high-profile bills already, voting expansion.
Yeah.
And the transgender rights and gay conversion ban bill, as you just mentioned. Senator Brad Hoylman will join us after a little while to talk briefly about that one, which was his bill. But what else is coming up in the short term? What are a few things that are next in the pipeline from this Democratic agenda backlog, as you called it?
Yes. Well, I mean, you know, we've been trying to codify Roe v. Wade in New York for years. I started carrying that bill in 2007 and had carried it for most of the time. Senator Krueger is, carrying it now. I mean, we will be able to take care of that. We're obviously been trying to expand background checks, just do sensible gun laws. We have not been able to do anything like that since we passed the SAFE Act years ago. So we are going to look at tightening that, banning bump stocks, you know, just normal things that other people, I mean, even Florida was able to do that. The Child Victims Act has been something we've been trying to pass for years, and we haven't been able to do that. We should be able to do that. We're going to pass the DREAM Act, which we have been talking about for a long time, certainly in the name of our deceased colleague, Jose Peralta. We are looking at criminal justice reforms. I mean, we could be very busy for months, and the exciting thing is that we're all not only on the same page with so many of these things, but in the assembly, I have a good partner, Speaker Hasty, and so, mm-hmm. Again, I think people will be able to see some real results, quicker. And I think we've already demonstrated that.
Yeah,
than we have ever been able to do before.
Let's go more into some of these things. By the way, one correction: when I was listing who's already announced for president, I said Senator Tulsi Gabbard from Hawaii. She's a member of Congress, a member of the House, not a member of the Senate. Thanks to a listener on Twitter for pointing out that mistake. Senator Stuart Cousins, do you support a Green New Deal? The governor used that term, which I think really Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez brought into the headlines. You know, it's something that progressive environmentalists have used for a while, but suddenly I think largely because of her, this is a national topic of conversation, and the governor adopted that phrase yesterday in the State of the State. Different people mean different things by that phrase. Do you support a Green New Deal?
Well, I certainly support a move towards making sure that we are acknowledging, which has never been done before. So let me just say yes. But we have never been in the position to even talk about, the environment, climate change, and our conference has been pushing and supporting this for years. Our colleagues across the aisle would not even admit that there was a climate change, and we wouldn't do anything about it. So, absolutely. They said, I'm excited. I mean, the governor was saying that he's liberated. Well, we're actually liberated. So I am looking forward to, of course, we have to transition jobs into to more environmentally friendly the circumstances, and you know, I can't wait. So yes,
the governor said
Green New Deal.
The governor said all carbon-free electricity in New York State
by 2040.
The year 2040. Which would make New York the first state in the nation to achieve that, I believe, if it's accomplished. How would you get there? Through what kinds of laws? How specific can you get?
Well, I mean, I think I can't get them. Listen, we got this. Believe it or not, we're still looking at what all he's proposed, because we just got it after he spoke on it. But one thing we aren't doing, as far as I know, is actually tracking what we are doing as it relates to reducing our carbon footprint. So I think we should begin by, figuring out how we can actually measure the progress that we are seeking to attain. So, you know, that's an important thing to do. And, you know, we're looking at thing in my own district. We're closing Indian Point. You know, what is the transition, and how are we creating the new job training in a new green economy? So there are a bunch of things to do that, you know, I think, you know, if we're very, very serious, we begin right now. But again, you can say we need to do this by 2040, but if we're not, you know, are we investing in wind? What are we doing in solar? How are we incentivizing people to use these alternative sources of energy? Even in our own garage, you know, I'm looking now at, like, where is the charging stations, for example, for our hybrid cars, for electric. I mean, what are we doing? So there are so many things that we could begin to do to measure and to model and to create an environment that actually puts our money and puts our thought process in that objective. But the fact that we're talking about objective like that gives us every opportunity to really work diligently to achieve it. I love racing to be the first state to do, you know, these kinds of progressive and creative things. At least we're racing in the right direction. Before, we were kind of on a treadmill, I think.
Listeners, your opportunity to ask a question of the new York State Senate Majority Leader, Andrea Stewart-Cousins, 212-433, WNYC, 212-433-9692, as they are already off to the races in the state legislature now that both houses are controlled by the same party, the Democrats, to pass a lot of legislation that was bottled up in the past with gridlock between the two houses. And on this day after Governor Cuomo's State of the State address, listing many of those agenda items and more. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And let's take a call, actually, from your district, where Mark in Yonkers is calling from. Hi, Mark, you're on WNYC.
Brian, thanks for taking my call. I am one of the last surviving music teachers in the Yonkers Public Schools. I know the senator well. Senator, I think I speak on behalf of all of us in Yonkers and the schools in the city to say how gratified and excited we are to see your ascendancy to the position you're in now. And we know that with you and Senator Shelley Mayer and Assemblyman Pretlow and Sage, we are so well represented right now. We're very excited about the future. I'd like to ask a question about the future of public education the Democrats control the three branches of government. Will there be a serious concerted effort now to redefine the public school funding formula and address some of the inequities between upstate and downstate? A city like Yonkers, which is considered wealthier because it's in Westchester County. And will we be able to codify these changes so that we're not bouncing from financial crisis to financial crisis each year?
Thank you, Mark. People who know me know that one of the reasons that I actually ran for Senate is because of the important role that the state legislature plays in funding education, and the uncertainty from time to time, especially when I was running, and that was with Elliot Spitzer at that time. I mean, there was no formula at all. And it was really just a matter of politics in many ways, you know, who was in power and so on. And we understand that that is unacceptable. And there has been a formula in place since 2007. And we have been trying to fix that formula, you know, over the years to be able to create a reality that no matter where you are, you can get the quality education that you need, no matter what your zip code, no matter where you live, no matter what your socioeconomic status is. We should be able to provide outstanding education. So that is the plan. That is the hope. I will be, you know, digging into the formulas. My objective is that, you know, we meet children where they are, and we help them achieve their greatest potential. And that means more resources. That means making sure that the educators have the resources they need. That means getting state-of-the-art schools. You shouldn't be sitting in crumbling schools expecting for people to do great. So, again, this is an opportunity that we have yet to have. And he's right. Senator Shelley Mayer, I've asked to be the chair of education. She, too, is a, you know, committed advocate, and my other colleagues in Westchester. We're in a good place. So
Senator, is
stabilized.
This... Go ahead. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Do you want to finish the thought?
No. I was just going to say we want to stabilize the funding. We want to obviously get more funding, but basically what we really want is kids to get a high-quality education that we should be able to deliver because we are who we are.
So is this going to be a source of conflict or at least negotiation between you and the governor? Because there are people who say he doesn't want to commit enough money to the public school systems around the state. That was one of the main reasons that Cynthia Nixon ran against him in a Democratic primary last year. And it's one of the things that keeps coming up. He says the Campaign for Fiscal Equity lawsuit ruling from about 15 years ago that said that the state was underfunding, especially the poorest district public schools, which I think include Yonkers, has not been met yet. That funding level has not yet satisfied what the court had in mind, but he recently called that a dead letter and something from the past. So is this going to be a source of conflict or negotiation between the two of you?
Well, I'm sure it'll be a source of negotiation. I'm not assuming it'll be a source of conflict. I think it's important, again, that we do the things we need to do to make sure that that we are fair in the funding of schools, that we are, again, putting money where it's going to achieve results, that we measure those results, and that we find ways to create environments and infrastructure and resources that get us to where we want to go. So I mean, I'm listening to what the governor said, and he was talking about how poorer districts were getting less money. I mean, that was the point of CFE. So we all at least agree to that. So how are we going to fix it? So again, you know, I think conflict is more when you all don't agree on the same set of facts. So we all agree on those facts. How are we going to fix it? So that may be where the negotiation comes in.
A good starting point. Donna in Manhattan, you're on exactly. WNYC with New York State Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins. Hi, Donna.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Leader, my question is about the congestion pricing.
Yes.
I live in Manhattan. The first time I ever heard of congestion pricing was in Singapore, which is not a progressive model. It seems to me that if there's a school aide who drives into Manhattan to make her salary and she drives in from the Bronx, that's going to be an unfair tax for her. And so I'm very concerned that everybody will pay the same entry And I would like to know what creative thinking you are doing on this subject.
Well, you know, we are, we've just begun the creative thinking because we are hearing all of the concerns, and we obviously know the problems, and we, you know, the big problem being that we need a sustained source of revenue for MTA and so on. So we are aware of the concerns, and you know, that's probably going to be one of the toughest, you know, pieces of this budget, frankly, to get to a point where we, you know, agree on how it is this is resolved. But we do need to have, creative thinking, because obviously we don't want to solve one problem, quote unquote, and then create, you know, a myriad others. So I said, I don't have an answer right now, Donna, but our conference understands the importance of getting this right.
What's your own position on this, representing that district in Westchester that you do? I mean, with congestion pricing, one of the reasons it hasn't gotten through the legislature in the past is because there is kind of an inherent tension between people in Manhattan and people in the outer boroughs and the inner suburbs, including your district in Westchester, where they, you know, obviously feel put upon by that extra tax, as people see it, to drive into the business district in Manhattan. As an alternative, there's Mayor de Blasio's program for funding the MTA with a different kind of stream. That would be a small income tax hike on the highest earners in the state. Do you have a position on behalf of your district, or behalf of now you're, you know, trying to think in terms of the whole state as well? Is there a conflict between what you think is in the interest of the state and the interest of your district?
Yeah, well, you know, I know the last time we had this battle, a lot of my businesses, you know, a lot of the small businesses here that do business in New York were really very, very concerned about the cost of doing business if congestive pricing was to be implemented. Now I'm hearing more of what Donna said, which is, you know, this kind of one price for everybody seems to be, you know, a big, big concern. But, you know, the discussion, has really, it's been sort of there, but, you know, I think it begins in earnest. And, I really, again, want to get it right. So I imagine there'll be a lot of different, opinions. We'll probably come up with something. It may be kind of a hybrid situation. But,
You're acknowledging, acknowledging
it seems like
the,
everybody understands
the complexity, right?
Let me just say something about the taxes, too. I mean, I said one of the things I said initially, just so we're clear, is that I wasn't certainly looking to raise taxes, you know, at this moment in terms of taxing one group over another. Mm-hmm. That wasn't the plan. I think that with the Trump tax assault, we have to look at, you know, the impact. And again, in a district like mine, because I also have all those districts that you mentioned at the outset, in addition to Scarsdale, so I have like such a wide range of economic realities in this district, and we are all sort of bracing for what that means, this whole, mm-hmm. you know, Trump tax, what it means to New Yorkers. So the first thing I don't want to do is to find new ways to raise taxes.
Of course, not to linger on this, but I think the accountants say the people in that highest tax bracket that Mayor de Blasio is talking about generally see a tax reduction from the Trump tax bill because of the abolition of the alternative minimum tax. It's more upper middle class people who see a net increase because of the limits on state and local income tax deductions. But let's go on to another topic. Brian in Queens, you're on WNYC with State Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Brian. So basically, I just saw that the adult-use cannabis bill doesn't allow home cultivation for non-medical cardholders, which is a little troubling due to the incoming high prices of cannabis on the legal market. And, you know, what about for, you know, middle-income people who can't afford to buy it in a store? They should be allowed to cultivate at home.
How about that, Senator? Okay. And in general, the marijuana legalization bill, which I guess the governor wants in the first 100 days this year.
Yes, he does. As he said, he put a lot in that, you know, he's put a lot in his budget bills. And, you know, we are just getting to look at them. So, like I said, I think, you know, he laid out an ambitious agenda. We want to get it right. So we will be examining all of the policies through his budget, through his budget and the bills that he's put through. And, you know, because some have been vetted, some have been on hold for so long, you know, we will be passing those. And, you know, the other stuff we're going to have to figure out what's, you know, how we want to go. So Senator Savino, Senator Krueger have been working on these bills for quite some time.
The marijuana legalization
bills.
There's
no policy.
And we see.
But there's nothing that's set in stone.
And we see from the New Jersey experience, which we'll be talking about in our next segment, that they've been trying since last year when they won full Democratic control of state government, and they haven't gotten it through there yet because of conflict over details. So that's one thing. What the caller raises is permission to grow your own at home. Another one, I see that one of your new progressive state Senate members, Julia Salazar, tweeted after the governor's speech yesterday that it's unacceptable that communities could opt out of legalization locally because that would further the inequities of communities most adversely affected by illegal pot in the criminal justice system, according to Senator Salazar. Do you have an opinion on that
Well,
yet?
You know, Brian, you know, I mean, one of the things that I've been saying, too, is that as far as I'm concerned, we need to first deal with the decriminalization piece. I mean, how many people, especially in a community of color, have been incarcerated? You remember the whole stop and frisk situation. People would wind up emptying their pockets and you have, you know, a joint in your pocket and all of a sudden you're in the system. So we need to do a lot in terms of A, decriminalization, B, expunging records, because you've got a record and now all of a sudden, with legalization, it's not a problem. So they said there is a multi-step situation that, as far as I'm concerned, has to happen that will make this, okay.
So the process has begun. For the last few minutes of our time together, we're going to be joined by one of your colleagues from the state Senate, Brad Hoylman from Manhattan, his district kind of in the center of the borough from the village up through the lower part of the Upper West Side and some up the East Side as well. And it was Senator Hoylman's bill, listeners, that passed yesterday that bans so-called gay conversion therapy and also provides more transgender rights. So, Senator Hoylman, welcome back to WNYC. Hi.
Hey, thanks, Brian. And hello, Andrea. It's so great to be on with you.
Nice to be with you, Brad.
You know, Brian, you know, you hear a lot about people saying AOC down in Washington, but we're up in Albany, we're saying ASC.
That's right.
Because the leadership that Andrea Stewart-Cousins is providing in the Senate is just phenomenal. We leapt a quantum leap yesterday in passage of these human rights protections for transgender and gender nonconforming people. So it was an amazing day.
And we just have 2 or 3 minutes left in the segment. You want to tell people the main things that legislation does?
Sure. The bill that we passed yesterday would add gender identity and expression into New York's anti-discrimination and hate crimes laws. Basically, you can't be fired according to statute once the governor signs this bill. For being transgender, you can't be kicked out of a restaurant. You can't lose your lease on an apartment. And the second bill would ban that practice where state-licensed therapists formally could try to change a kid's sexual orientation. So both bills, I think, were so important to the LGBT community because the Republicans, for 8 years, blocked any specific LGBTQ legislation from coming to the fore in the first place. So we really needed a change of leadership, Brian. And not only that, we got 18 votes from Republicans on banning gender, banning gay conversion therapy, and 3 votes on the transgender human rights law, which goes to show you that if the Republicans had only allowed these bills to go to the floor, we could have passed them decades ago.
Yeah. Why do you think this was number 2 out of the box? You had the voting expansion on Monday and then this yesterday. With all these other big things on the table, rent and marijuana and the MTA and so much else, boom, you expanded voting. Boom, you expanded LGBT rights.
I think it's important that we recognize that, you know, the leader, Andrea Stewart-Cousins, and the conference understand that there's nothing more fundamental in our government than democracy and human rights. And to do those in a 1-2 punch right after each other in the first legislating week of session, I think sends a message to New Yorkers that this is an open and inclusive government, just the opposite of what we're seeing coming out of Washington.
And Senator Stewart-Cousins, I'll give you the last word on that same thing I heard you trying to get in.
Well, yes. I mean, I think, but Brad, as usual, articulated it very, very well. We're there because people voted. And I think the putting out the expanding the franchise on our first working day says, we hear you, we respect you, we're about you. And as far as yesterday, it was Martin Luther King's, the anniversary of Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday yesterday. And as I said on the floor, his message was one of inclusion. His message was one of equality. His message is one that we're going to celebrate over this weekend in all of our districts. I wanted to be able to say that we are not only hearing the dream, we are living the dream, we're expanding the dream, and that's what New York is about.
The New York State Senate Majority Leader, Andrea Stewart-Cousins, along with a brief appearance from State Senator Brad Hoylman of Manhattan. Thank you so much for both of you for coming on today, and we'll keep talking.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Much more to come.